Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And we're going to go to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline, and we're going to talk to Chris Fedor of 92.3 The Fan and Cleveland.com. He is their Cleveland Cavs beat reporter. What's up, Chris? Long time no hear.
What's going on, GB? How are you, man?
Man, you out here living, winning. I see you doing big things up here, man. Glad to touch down with you, man. You know,
always,
man. You know what, man? I had to check in with you, man, because there was a couple developments. First, I wanted to talk to you about. I've been nostalgic lately. I've been looking. The Cavs been going through some transitions, and of course, you know, when you're going through the growing pains, I've been reading your articles, and I've been kind of following the narrative and the timeline, because you've been following the progression of some of these young guys. Following that, I've been going back to watch some of these old games. And, you know, I looked at Dan Gilbert, and I've been following his health issues and stuff. And I've been going back and just saying, you know, why is it that Dan hasn't gotten some of that credit? You know, he won in 2016, and he brought that championship home, and a lot of that, he got the monkey off our back as far as getting that championship here. But it seems that as he's gone away, it seems like he's almost forgotten a little bit. As covering a team, it seems like he's a forgotten owner in this town as far as what he was able to do. Do you think that he doesn't get enough credit for bringing a championship to Cleveland?
I'm not sure that I do agree with that, GB. I actually think that Dan is one of the first owners that people talk about when they talk about success. And I think you can define success a lot of different ways. And I think there's a strong argument to be had about Dan Gilbert versus some of the other owners in this town. But you're right. He definitely deserves credit for bringing a championship here, because his willingness to spend, his willingness to go into luxury tax, his willingness to make the difficult decisions when it comes to changing coaches because he felt that was right for the team at the time. Like, all those things you have to give him credit for. Now, on the other side of that, you could say if you're a good owner, you find the right coach the first time. If you're a good owner, this, and this. You don't do all of this kind of stuff, right? But at the same time, like you said, he brought the championship here. He was a big part of that, and that can never be taken away from Dan, despite some of his other missteps along the way.
When you're talking about it and you look at it, one of the things that I'm looking at it during the progression of this team is, you know, Colin Sexton, and we've been talking about it a little bit during the show, is Colin from year one to now being able to be able to knock down that shot. Now he's been able to do things like finish at the rim. Where have you seen the biggest progression from Colin Sexton from year one to year two from you watching his progression?
I think, GB, recently it's just been understanding what his teammates need from him and understanding what this organization needs from him. And I think that's great because, look, yeah, he can go out and he can score buckets. And I talked to Colin about this the other day, and he said, I feel like I can get my shot off anytime. I feel like I can score anytime. That's kind of who I am. That's kind of who I have always been. That's who I've been for the first 2 years here in the NBA. But now I'm starting to understand the game on a deeper level. I'm understanding when the defense collapses, I have those spray outs for open three-pointers. I'm understanding when the weak side guy comes to help at the rim, I've got the corner open. And seeing that kind of progression from Colin matters so much to this organization. That's what his teammates want to see from him. That's what his coaches want to see from him. So I think that's huge.
Yeah, it's crazy because I'm starting to see some of those same things that you're seeing. It's like it's almost like he's figuring out on the court where he can get him at. Like if it's, right. it's pulling up in the lane, it's whether I need to go all the way to the basket, finishing with the left hand or the right hand. And it's always it's always seems like before he was playing with just one speed, really, really fast, which we know he's good at. But
I mean, I was talking to somebody about that around the NBA, GB. I forget which point guard it was. It was one of the recent ones that the Cavs had played, and I was talking to one of their coaches. And they said it took that point guard, again, I forget who it was, 3 or 4 years to understand pacing and understanding change of speed. It doesn't happen overnight. We're talking about young kids that are maturing both on the court and off the court, right? That mm-hmm. they're improving physically and mentally. They're not going to know these things when they come into the league. They're not going to have it all figured out after year two. One of the things that frustrates me about Colin, it's like this kid should be still in college, and he's already here in the NBA. He just turned 21, and he's accomplished some really, really impressive things for somebody that was drafted 8th overall and somebody that is his age. And yet people continue to focus on the things that he can't do instead of the things that he can do, whereas he has shown that early on some of those things that people thought he couldn't do, he's already worked to change, or he has changed them. So if he's already evolved in such a short time, just 2 years into his NBA career, why do you think that he's just going to stop going into year three, year four, year five? This is somebody who works his butt off. He's one of the hardest workers on the team, and he's shown a level of growth from the beginning of his rookie year to the end of his rookie year, then from his rookie year to his second year. So you start to think about what he can be year three, year four, year five, and it should be a little bit more exciting because he probably will have a deeper understanding of some of those things, GB. And yeah, he dribbles into traffic too much. And sometimes he takes one too many dribbles. And sometimes he misses his teammates on passes. But he's getting better every single night.
Talking to Chris Feeder on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. And he is the Cavs beat reporter for Cleveland.com. When you look at this and you look at Colin Sexton and another kid that I think a lot of guys were really excited about when he had a little bit of an explosion the other night was Porter Jr.
Mm-hmm.
He has some of the game, you know, he has a little bit of that step back game, that wiggle that Harden has. He has some of that game that we all see that says, oh, man, if we can get one of those guys, the guy can get a mm-hmm. shot that can get to the basket. Where do you see his game and what his ceiling could possibly be? And what does Bickerstaff think that his game can possibly morph into with a little more seasoning and a little and maybe an offseason of working on his game?
Yeah, so I think J.B. Bickerstaff said it best, GB. He said Kevin Porter Jr. is what the NBA currently is. And that's great because those are the kinds of guys that shift playoff series in the future, right? Those are the kinds of guys that can change the perspective of an entire rebuild in the future. Just that kind of skill set, that length, that athleticism, wings in the NBA. That's what it's about. Everybody's looking for guys like Kevin Porter Jr. And the Cavs seem like they have a gem here. 30th overall pick, last pick of the first round, fell to their lap because of some off-the-court stuff. And the Cavs always felt like, GB, if we give him structure, if we give him proper coaching, if we give him the things in life that he hasn't had up to this point, with that kind of talent, that kind of athleticism, what could he be? And I think you see flashes of that so far this year. And J.B. Bickerstaff, I asked him point blank the other day walking down the hall. I said, look, everything with this organization is big picture. So big picture, what does Kevin Porter Jr. mean to this organization? And for the first time, he said he can be a cornerstone of this thing. And I think that's how his teammates view him. That's how the front office views him. And now everybody's starting to view him that way.
Man, that's you know, for the first time, I think actually, to be truthful, I think the fans are starting to view him that way. And I think for the first time, they're trying to view Colin Sexton that way, because they've shown in the last, I think, about month or so, what both of those guys can actually bring to the table. I was really impressed with the way they hit shots down the stretch. They've been playing meaningful minutes. And I think they've shown why they got rid of Jordan Clarkson. I mean, yes. Jordan was playing well, but it was a log jam for minutes. They wanted to see the young dudes play. Moving to Darius Garland, how does this thing work? I think we've talked about two bright spots, and Garland is a bright spot too. But how does this work with the positioning? I mean, you got two guys that are point guard or a combo guard. I think a lot of people want to see Porter get the minutes or starting minutes. How does this thing work with three guards in two positions?
I don't know. It's something that they have to figure out. And they might have an even more difficult decision coming up in June, too, GB, because this draft has a bunch of point guards near the top of it, or just a bunch of guards near the top of it, and not a lot of wings, not enough bigs. And that's something that the Cavs are going to have to figure out, and that's something that they're going to have to work through. I don't think they're going to ignore all the guards at the top of this draft simply because they drafted Kevin Porter Jr. and Darius Garland. It's not ideal to add another one, but you just have to keep acquiring talent at this stage. And I think that's what they're willing to do. But in the short term, for the remainder of these 20 games and going into next year, Darius has to be better. We can start there. Like, the Cavs knew this was going to be a tough rookie season for him because he only played four full games in college, and because he had knee surgery and he was still working his way back and he was shaking off the rust and he didn't have that game experience that some of the other freshmen from his class did. But at the same time, he's got to be better. The reason why they drafted him fifth overall wasn't for this year. It was for next year, the year after that, and because they felt like Colin was a better fit as more of a combo guard and Darius was more of a pure point guard. So when you take it from that perspective, you feel like it could potentially fit moving into the future. Now, they have shown a lot of weakness on the defenses and the floor. That's something that they're going to have to figure out. And KPJ, some people inside the organization, GB, feel like he's more of a two than a three, even though he can play some three. So I think the most logical thing at some point in the future, not now, because Colin Sexton's still one of the most consistent and one of the best players that they have on this roster. But at some point in the future, I think the most logical thing is Colin becoming some version of Jordan Clarkson, where he's that elite sixth man type, and then Darius can run the show as the pure point guard. And then KPJ can slot in probably as the two, provided KPJ continues to ascend, continues on this particular trajectory. You know, just because the Cavs believe he has the tools to be a cornerstone GB, they also understand that he's got a long way to go, and he's got to find more consistency before they can start putting him in the starting lineup. At this point, when it's about accountability and building a culture, you simply cannot take Colin Sexton out of the starting lineup because he's been better than everybody, maybe not named Larry Nance Jr., since December 23rd when Jordan Clarkson was traded.
Speaking of Larry Nance Jr., where did he get this jumper from? Did Amazon Prime drop this jumper off to him one day shipping? Like, because this is crazy. Like, I mean, you know, I'm watching these games and it kind of started like in December, like he just started pulling up and I'm like, oh, I guess you kind of have to do that. But I mean, he's been knocking that down consistently.
Yeah, he really has. And he has been great since about the beginning of January. He was talking to me about that at one point. I don't remember exactly where we were. I think we were in Oklahoma City. And he just said, like, Chris, I'm not playing my game right now. He felt like the previous coaching staff was so focused, or at least the previous head coach, I should say that, because the coaching staff has remained the same for one guy.
Yeah, we see where you're going with that.
He felt the previous coach didn't give him the freedom to do some of the stuff that he did last year in his breakout season. He felt the previous coach was too focused on spacing and making Nance be a catch-and-shoot type guy. And he's like, I want to show more of my game. I feel like there is more of my game. So during that time that he was out with a knee injury, he kind of had some conversations with himself and trying to get himself in a better mental space. And since coming back from that knee injury, he's been great. He's been a walking double-double. John Beilein, before he stepped down, even said, we've got to find more minutes for this guy because he's playing at such a high level consistently. And J.B. Bickerstaff has said the same thing, G.B. He's playing at such a high level consistently, and they have such a loaded front court that they've actually experimented with Larry at the three so that he can get more minutes. And he can play alongside Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson. And because he's knocking down that outside shot and showing some off-the-dribble game and some of that offensive and defensive versatility, they're like, hey, maybe we can use him at the three in stretches because we don't have very many good options at the three for long periods of time. He worked on his off-season game so much. He worked on ball handling. He worked on three-point shooting. Shot about 20,000 three-pointers. He changed his shot a little bit with assistant coach Dan Giroux, who kind of works with all the bigs, both in the offseason, shoot-around, practices. So all of that work that Larry has done has led him to this point where he's become a versatile offensive weapon. J.B. Bickerstaff called him a Swiss Army knife the other night.
And about 30 seconds here, Kenny Atkinson, what's going on with that, man? Kenny Atkinson,
I think,
man, golly.
I think Kyrie has a knack for coaches changing around him. Let's just put it that way. I think, honestly, he did the things that he was brought to Brooklyn to do, right? And I think if we're talking about J.B. Bickerstaff with the Cavs and we're talking about John Beilein with the Cavs and it not working, sometimes certain coaches are good fits depending on where you are. David Blatt wasn't a good coach for where the Cavs were when LeBron James came back and a team competing for a title, GB. But that doesn't mean that he wasn't a good coach. Right? John Beilein, it doesn't mean that he wasn't a good coach. It just means he wasn't a good coach for the NBA because he couldn't connect to NBA players. And I think in the case of Kenny Atkinson, he was brought to Brooklyn to instill a culture, develop their players, get them out of the doldrums, and then hand it over to somebody else to do the rest of the work. And I think he did all the things that Brooklyn wanted him to do, and they felt like now that this team is ready to kind of take off with KD coming back next year and Kyrie being there, it's time for somebody different. Maybe even somebody like Ty Lue, who has shown ability to, you know, coach a team to the highest level.
All right, man. I appreciate it, Chris. Thanks for coming on with me, man. Great talking to you, man. We'll check in again sometime, man.
You got it, brother.
I appreciate it.
You know how to reach me.
All right, man. Appreciate it, man. Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com, Cavs beat reporter, and he's on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline.